Joel, you want to give us a counter round?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Rich, can you just go suck it?
Big O! Showtime!
Well, you were making it pretty young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are licking bad. But the drone is going back to DLNGS. Download and IC challenge the Linux Tech.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the gala's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 816 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Alan.
Hello, hello, hello.
We have Jobel.
Good evening.
We have Pat.
Wee, baby.
We have Fly Rich.
From the Orlando Outpost.
And Joe.
Last but not least.
Never least. The mostest.
Oh.
Trust everybody had a good holiday.
Yes, fingers and toes are still attached.
I didn't even see any fireworks.
We saw some up at my brother-in-law's the weekend before, and watched the ones on TV because there's no way I'm getting caught downtown. That place is just a zoo.
You can fly your drone like 1,000 feet high and watch them.
Well, first off, that would be illegal because you can only fly up to 400 feet above
the
level.
Yeah, Rich.
No, the week before,
See, I was trying to bait him in. I was going to give this audio to the FAA.
Yeah, the week before the 4th of July, there's the largest fireworks display in Texas that's like 3 blocks from my house. So I got to watch that, and I got to watch this guy. I don't know what drone he had, but it was up there for a good 20, 30 minutes just recording everything, and it's about a block from my house.
I did do that, but I did it from the house, and I'm about, put it this way, I recorded in 4K and cropped it, and still kind of looks a little small, but you can see it. But
so,
it
Joe,
worked
you,
out.
You sit in your front lawn with like a keg and a lawn chair and just hang out?
Well, with the wife. No keg, no lawn chair.
Who needs
no
a keg?
Chair.
You just grab a bottle, dude.
You right? Don't sit on your wife, do you?
Sometimes.
Yeah, he does.
I don't know if you call it sitting, though.
All right, that was,
how
what,
long,
10
how
minutes
long?
Till we hit the gutter?
How long did it last?
not even that much.
That's what she asked.
How long did the
it's like snow. You never know how many inches or how long it lasts.
Yeah.
Oh, it was probably 45 minutes of fireworks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was.
We had
fireworks. We didn't go last. We actually went to it not last year, but the year before, and sat there all day and saw the concert, and then saw the fireworks display. But it's just a little too crowded and a little too much hassle, especially when we're only a couple of blocks away and can still see the fireworks.
This year, they decided to do the fireworks here on the 5th. I don't know why. Maybe not to compete with the other places. But they're really good. Because last year, a quarter way through the fireworks display, they were launched them off a barge out there in the water. It caught on fire.
Right. That's the kind of fireworks you're looking for.
Yeah. So that didn't go over too well. And they had to wait till it went out so that they could get on there.
Did they find the brace and bits and scuba gear used to sink the barge?
No. it was good. I got some Linux stuff.
I'm
gonna lay it down. Lay it down from the straight.
Wait. Before you drop the Linux stuff, I just want to ask a quick question. Has anybody picked up the Pi 4 yet?
No. I have not.
Okay,
not tried. Brian on the mini PC show got one.
Yeah, they're a little difficult to get unless you want the 1 gig, and what's the point?
Yeah, I want to get the 4 gig, and they came out on Friday at Micro Center, so James Middendorf, his wife, was going to go get me one, but they were already sold out.
Yeah,
so you probably had to wait online.
I checked online on at Micro Center because they said they had the 4 gigs, and I checked right after opening, and they had none.
So I ordered one from Canakit. It's supposed to ship on the 19th.
Of August?
July.
I was going to say, there is a couple minor things that they've noticed, those who already have them. One is there's some thermal issues. I'm just going to come out and say it right now. If you want to not have your Pi throttle, go ahead and purchase a heatsink and a fan.
There's a decent heatsink fan setup for $20.
Yes, they're cheap enough.
The fan and shim?
Might be it. I don't know.
Yeah. So that's one thing. And then the other is apparently there is a problem with the USB-C power port in that
they cheated on the resistors.
Yeah, well, it's not just resistors, because E-Mark, I think it is? Is it E-Marked? USB-C cables have a chip in them.
Yes, yeah, so helps because of that, they used a single resistor to pull down two lines, and that particular cable thinks it's an audio device and won't power it.
Correct. So basically just use a cheap-ass cable and you're going to be all right. And
but not too cheap, because you need to deliver
true.
3 amps. Yep. Realistically, you don't need to deliver 3 amps unless you're sucking down USB-3 power off it.
Right. And what I think is probably going to happen is I'm betting this is one of those kinds of things that in the next batch of boards that ships, it may already be fixed. So,
yeah, there's an article on that somewhere where they're upgrading it on the next revision.
That seems to be, I'm like, really? How do you let that out? I'm not cutting on the Raspberry Pi guys. They've done a fantastic service to the community, even if they only came out with a Raspberry Pi 1. That was a fantastic service to the community. But power design, that's pretty simple. There's reference models for that. Alan, you can tell us all about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, in that case, like you said, they should have just copied the schematic right from the USB specs. And they wouldn't have made, they were trying to cut a corner. Maybe size or something. They decided that was the best way of going, which is a single. It's so sort of odd that they did a lot of testing why they didn't find that out beforehand.
Because they only had cheap cables.
Although I think if you buy the power supply from them, you don't get that issue. That may have been why.
That was weird. It gave out a package for people to test and disconnected.
Yeah, if it's got their power supply, they may never notice that it wasn't working for other people.
Yeah, but don't you think you would test with a number of different, power supply cable combinations?
One would hope. One would hope. I would just love it if I can get, even for the old Pi 3s, be nice if I can get a multi-USB charger that can power more than one off and one outlet. I mean, you can't get one that has more than one port at 3 amp.
You can. Well, 2.5 amps. You can't do a Pi 4, but you could do Pi 3s and earlier. So the Rav Power, who's the other one? That's my favorite. Hold on, I got one right here. Let's see. Aukey will do it. Rav Power will do it. So
I'll have to look for those, but then I'm not going to buy another Pi 3, though.
Yep, yeah. Yeah, that's. I had to get a new power supply. I mean, I picked up a power supply for the Pi 4. Hopefully it doesn't have the high-end cable.
Yep.
Hopefully it came with a cheap cable.
Now, I did find there is a really nice case on Thingiverse, and I actually put it in. It came out really nice. It's one of those designed to hold the fan in the top, and then, of course, I don't know if it will hold. It looks like it's designed to screw the fan into the top of the lid, and then you would just put just a regular heat sink on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen those cases. They look like they do the job.
Yep, and they're really nice. You can actually the one I'm speaking of is if you're trolling on Thingiverse, you'll see the one that has, looks like it has holes in it, and that's because.
Oh, I saw the one you shared.
Right. One of the suggested ways to print it is to eliminate the top and the bottom layer. That way, you see the infill through it. So, I did that, and it worked out okay, but I did, reprint it with it solid. And I also reoriented what they call it the lower, but I would call it the top. But I reoriented that so that it would actually need support when I was printing it, so that the little fingers that go between the USB ports, that the printer pattern went in the right direction to make it stronger. So instead of going around the little pegs that stick up, it's going long ways, so it basically makes that little section of the case a lot stronger, and it did work out a lot better. Support material. I used tree supports. A little bit of that to clean up, but it wasn't too bad, and it looks pretty nice. I posted the one today solid ones.
Yeah, I think the solid one looks better than the one with all the holes in it that you printed out.
Yep. I could and I don't even know if you could print the one with the holes in it. Well, really, it's the same model. It's just you turn off the top and bottom layer. Well, I can't do that if I reorient it like I did with the solid one. Because what would happen is the side would have the holes in it, and the top, which I want to have the holes in it, won't have the holes in it. So I don't know how you can print it. Unless you just remodeled it and put holes in it, which I have thought about that. That's one of the ones I found that I like the best. But I may end up buying one anyway. When I finally, buying a case and the Pi together. Because I'm kind of hoping that there's some that are talking about new Pi cases where it's about the size of a Nook, so I'm assuming it would probably have either a power supply built into it, or a power supply and a fan built into it, like a larger fan, like maybe a 120mm fan or something like that to really cool it down. I gotta find them in stock yet, and like you said, it's not worth buying the one with one gig of RAM. If that's the only one you can find, you might as well just buy a Pi 3.
Yeah, I'm gonna hold off on it right now. I got money I need for other things, so.
Yep. Yeah, I probably will too, mostly because while I'm going to Detroit here next week, Detroit area actually, not Detroit proper. Thank God.
Detroit Rock City.
But doing that, and then I'm going to go to Kelly's Island next month for a little camp out just for the weekend, just to kind of get away and go fishing on the lake. But plus, eventually, when the tree guy comes, he's going to do some tree work for me, too. I got a pine tree in the back that needs trimmed. And he's also there's a mulberries that just kind of started to spread out all over my yard. So there's a couple spots with mulberries. I'm going to have him cut those down too.
Be a man and cut your own trees.
Yeah, the one that's as tall as my house, I don't think so, dude. I did have when I bought my last weed eater, which was just recently, I bought the attachment, which essentially adds a chainsaw to the end of the weed eater, and it has like two sections, so I can go pretty tall, but I don't think I can reach all the way to the top. Plus, it's really close to the house.
You got a drone?
And my drone, there's no way my drone's picking up a chainsaw.
Is this something called a ladder?
Yeah, no. It's called learning your limits, son. Learning your limits, and I've learned mine. I did trim the one in my front yard, and it worked great. for that. I use the chainsaw and the tree trimming attachment for my weed eater.
Maybe if you stand on the car on blocks, you can get to the top of the tree.
That car's long gone, dude. Where have you been? Anyway. So, kind of one subject I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about.
Is it Linux related?
Can be. Can
Is
be.
Is it about Buster?
Because I got Linux related topic.
Mm-hmm. He's busting his chops, but I want to go first because this probably won't take a lot of time. But does anyone remember when you first started using the internet back in the old days of the modem? Something called net etiquette.
Wait, what's the question?
Net etiquette. Do you remember when people were talking about net etiquette when we first started using the internet, like in the 90s?
Like RTFM?
No, more like, okay, if you're on Usenet, you don't want to put the same thing on all a whole bunch of different groups, you know, no cross-posting and stuff like that.
Oh, that kind of stuff, yeah, okay.
Yeah. It apparently is out the window completely now. I am a member of many Facebook groups, which I'm going to probably start trimming them because it's getting seriously ridiculous on the ham radio ones. Whenever something I'm going to say kind of interesting to ham radio people, like, for example, there's a thing in France, in ITU region, one, I believe it is their region, but there's somebody that's trying to adopt the 2-meter band for some aviation use over there. Yeah, and all the ham radio guys are freaking out, and I would see the same story posted 2 and 3 times in each of these Facebook groups. It's like, oh. And same thing happened with the Raspberry Pi 4 power supply deal. And by the way, these are groups with admins too. So, but the problem is there's a few thousand members in each of these groups, and it's kind of hard to have somebody police them all the time. But a lot of this, though, goes from just not following good net etiquette. Back in the day, I remember when people on Usenet would chastise you when you would cross-post. People actually gave a crap if you used too much bandwidth. Nowadays, they don't care.
Well, the best thing to do is just stay off Facebook. But
yeah,
they don't have any problems at all.
May come to that.
Yeah, you know, what's kind of funny about this, Joel, is your statement about that and practicing net etiquette is like you're preaching to the choir here. And,
oh yeah,
yeah,
I know.
That's the problem. People who are doing that aren't listening to this show.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know. Well, yeah.
They're not listening to this show. They're not listening to Alan.
Everyone talks about AI and all this stuff that AI is going to do for us. And the one thing AI could do is you know, what would be nice if doesn't matter Facebook or Twitter or whatever social media site you use. It'd be nice if it, like, would search things like Snopes and stuff before you post it and say, oh, hey, you may not want to post that. That might not be real. Yeah, or at least tell you that, hey, that's not right. but you know,
well, that would pretty much destroy Facebook right there.
Oh, it would actually.
If you stop posting things that are, if you're actually trying to post things that are real, that's the wrong place to find it.
So I got a question for you, Joel, and I'm curious about this.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan, you can chime in on this, but I think just by what Alan was saying, he's not going to have an answer to this. But why so many? You said you're part of a bunch of different ham radio groups. Why so?
Mm-hmm.
Why so many?
That's
these,
also
like,
a good point
local
too.
Group stuff.
Some of it is like now there's there are multiples that are generic, which, you know, that's, I'm going to pick the best one eventually and stick with that one.
Uh-huh.
But then, so that's probably what I'm going to do is just unfollow all the rest of them. and leave the rest of them. But some of them, like, are specific to certain things within ham radio. Like, for example, there's a VHF group where most of the conversation is supposed to be around VHF radio or 2-meter. Okay. There is a group on about D-Star, which is all about D-Star and how to set up the hotspots and stuff like that, you know. That, and it's, that's the kind of conversation that happens there. ARRL has a page. So, and there's all these different ham radio related topics that have different groups on there. So, but there are at least three different generic ones. And for some dumb reason, I followed all, I joined all of them. I'm probably gonna, like I said, pick the best one and go with that one. At least then that'll cut the amount of tripe that I see. Cause there's quite a bit of it. You know, and all it goes down to is, you know, like I said, I'm preaching to the choir because we all read that stuff. We're all of the age where we first started, you know, I won't say we're first generation internet users, but we're pretty dang on close to it. You know, we remember a time when there was no internet for normies. So, and you're right. Hey, well, you're absolutely right. Right. So, I mean, it's not just a problem there. It's just, you know, that's like how stupid crap, like, the news is treating, you know, two or three people on Twitter who have a problem with a black little mermaid. You know, stupid. I mean, that's just literally nobody I actually follow and actually care about gave a crap about it. But of course the news media says, oh, everybody's is all up in arms on that, and like the red coffee cups at Christmas time with Starbucks.
Is that what's being cross posted to your ham radio group?
No. Mostly the 2-meter thing that's happening in France that's not even happening in for at least 3 or 4 years yet. If it happens at all, and it probably won't happen.
Say that's not going to happen anyway, so.
No, it's not going to happen. I mean, people are just freaking out about it, and, you know, and I'm like, dude, you want to guarantee that 2-meter will be there? Pick a freaking radio so when I go call, say I'm listening, you can respond back. Respond back. You hear somebody calling, and they're not calling for anybody in particular. Call back and talk to them. Don't just sit there and say, well, I don't want to talk to him. You know, use it. There. Sorry to get that excited about that, but that's the truth.
I was going to say, it's the most excited we've seen you in a long time there, Joel.
But, you know, and then it's and the other moronic crap like that, you know, that and, like, you know, you see the same, there was, I don't know how many years ago, it probably is 10 or 15 years ago now, but I know you've probably seen it, Alan, but the picture of the model holding the soldering iron at the wrong place.
Yeah. And that's fucking,
at the hot that's place.
That's a stock picture too.
Yes, it is. It's a stock picture. You know, and you know, they're just sure, I'm like, dude, come on, really? I mean, that's only been shared 30 times.
Yeah, I mean, you can get your laugh off of that once, and then it's like, okay, on to the next thing, you know?
Yep, I mean, Dan, you're right on it there. These are people that really have no clue, you know, well, how do I? I'm just gonna post it. Why should I have to search to see if anybody else posted it? I don't know. Maybe because you're trying to be nice. I don't know. but yeah, I mean,
called
it just
shit posts.
Yep, shit posting. Yep. I've actually on some of the people that are regular at it, I actually block them.
I have blocked so many people, it's not even funny. I keep, like, one or two people that, like, allow me to, because of the shit that they post when I do log in, it gives me a whole set of new things to block. That's the only reason I'm still, that I still pay attention.
I've gone to, you know, I don't want to necessarily block actual friends. I just unfollow the ones that are really bad on Facebook. But what I usually do, like if somebody always shares stuff from a certain Facebook page, I'll go to that Facebook page and I'll block that page because it's like, I don't need to see that 500 times in my feed.
Yeah. Like I said, you just don't log in. That's the best way.
There is that. Well, if you don't log in there, Alan, maybe you should just terminate your account.
No, I log in, I've gotten down to maybe, once or twice a week.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, I've called out so many people that do nothing more than shitpost. There's really not a lot of people left on there that actually post. So, to me, I'm not missing
original
anything.
Original posts.
There's so few of that. And my niece and stuff, for where she, cause her band, she posts on there for her band page. But I get that in other places, so I don't really even care about that. And like I said, the couple of pages that I subscribe to really don't have anything in there. If I stopped subscribing to them today, I wouldn't miss anything. Hell, if I stop subscribing to Facebook, it's a waste of time. It's like, going out and, having a cigarette or something.
Yep. Then there's the ones that are trying to keep their group as apolitical as possible, which is increasingly hard, because so much of, real life touches politics. And somebody posted in the Colonial Williamsburg group, they posted something to the effect that people aren't as interested in the history as they used to be. So, for example, the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation itself is actually losing money and hurting. There is a possibility that if they don't figure out a way to get people to come there, that they could have to shut down at some point. And that's that's one of those important, it's one of those things where if that ever happened, then I would love it if, I'm not a fan of government taking things over, but that's one place I would love it if they did, if that actually happened. But anyway, so, and I posted, people, vaguely mentioned just the current political climate that is, and the admin deleted the post, and then she actually sent me a message via the Facebook Messenger feature. And I said, okay, well, if I can't talk about, if I can't make a post that's vaguely political like that, then I don't need you. I don't need this page. I don't, 90% of the page is garbage anyway, but you post something that's actually interesting, and I comment on it, and you think the comment's political, I'm done. So I just unfollowed the page. Not like I don't like Colonial Williamsburg. I love the place. It's great. But it's like I don't need to see 500 posts a day. And it's all about controlling and controlling your feed and controlling what you see. And it doesn't really matter whether it's Facebook or Mastodon or Twitter or MeWe. It doesn't really matter. If you don't take control in the feed that you see, then the person at fault for seeing just useless garbage on these social networks is yourself.
True, true.
Can I get to my Linux thing now?
Go for it, dude.
Oh, yeah. So, we started the show in 93, right?
Around that, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had already been using Linux for a number of years before that, and I kind of for the longest time I was running Slackware and then Arch Linux. And, other Debian and stuff on different things and stuff like that, but primarily Slackware and Arch, and occasionally do runs of Ubuntu. So, my last run of Ubuntu, what I noticed when I had gone through, I think, how long was I running that for? I'm thinking I must have gone through four or five upgrades on that. No, wait, there was a time when the hard drive bit the dust. But I think I rescued everything, but I still had to do an install, and that was about a little over a year ago. But one of the things that I've noticed, particularly with Ubuntu, is for some reason it gets a little pokier if you keep doing upgrades over top of it. That's been my perception. Now, it could be because I run stock Ubuntu, whatever, I wanted to get the experience of their interface for a while. What was Unity, and then they went to GNOME 3. So I kind of followed both ways. So maybe it's a GNOME issue, maybe it's a Unity issue, more so than an Ubuntu issue. Just the perceptions of how things are running inside of those environments. Because when I was on Slackware or Arch Linux, I spent the majority of my time in Fluxbox or XFCE or WindowMaker even. So those are very lightweight. They get out of your way and they don't do a lot for you. And so there's not a lot of cruft in the background that you have with KDE or GNOME. So it is possible that it's not just strictly Ubuntu, that it could be any distribution where you keep upgrading in place and it's the desktop environment that you're using. I don't know. So I kind of got a little bored with Ubuntu and how it was getting slower. So I got a bug in my ass that I was like, maybe I should try Slackware on this machine. But having listened to GNU World Order this year, I had heard Klaatu did a couple of episodes where he did an installation of CentOS as his workstation. It's a really good episode. He talks about it, his feelings about it and everything, since he uses CentOS on a regular basis for work. Why not see about running it on the desktop? And of course, it is kind of sparse, and you do have to go through some extra hoops to get other kinds of, you know, more desktop oriented software installed on there, because it's not part of the traditional CentOS repositories. But, you know, he said that's not dissimilar to what he would have to do with Slackware. You know, you have a base system and you got to go get the other stuff. So be that as it may for him, I use CentOS on a regular basis, and I'm like, you know, I'm not interested in running CentOS as a desktop. But it's been a long time since I ran Red Hat as a desktop. Why not Fedora? And so I said, I'm going to install Fedora 30. Now, what I did is I went out to the download section of Fedora's website. Very easy. There were a couple of options there. I did not want to download the full, you know, ISO of like 3 or 4 gigabytes. I could have, but why bother? I'm like, I do my Arch installs through the network. Therefore, I'm going to do a network install, which is basically a bare bones installer, and it just pulls down the packages off the internet as opposed to having them on the local media. So, you know, what you save up front in download and getting started time is a trade-off on the back end, but you can customize what you want and just pull those files instead of having to have the whole thing. 6 of 1, half a dozen or the other, you know. It eventually makes up for itself in either way. Anyway, I pulled down the network install, flashed it onto SD card and booted off my laptop with it's the Anaconda. I think it's still called Anaconda. I could be wrong. Of course, I didn't look up or read about how to do the installation, because I've been doing this for years and it's Fedora, right? How much different could it be from Ubuntu? And, you know, to be honest with you, it's not. In some regards, I like the Fedora Anaconda installer a little better than Ubuntu, and in other regards it was very painful. Now it's not fair for me to do a comparison and say that this thing was dog slow. because I can't say how it compared to doing a non-network based install. I find it hard to believe that just because I had the base image and it would pull packages off the network, the actual installer itself from the get-go would be kind of kludgy. My biggest problem was that while all my hardware was detected and everything was kind of set up, my mouse, my trackpad on my laptop was a little flaky. It was kind of hard to get the motion down and the button clicking. It was slow and when I plugged in a mouse, an external mouse, it worked great, right? But just the trackpad was just not working very well under that installer. And I also noticed it was not very responsive. Like it wouldn't let me know in some visual way that I had completed or I had chosen what I wanted to do and it was processing. Like, so the first screen that comes up, it's kind of like a verification to say, oh, we're presenting you US English and the US keyboard, and we're going to do an install language of English, and so we're good, right? And I click on to go to the next part of the phase, and it doesn't do anything. And the first time I did this, like, I'm like waiting, and I'm like, did it register? And I click again, and I'm like, is it picking up my mouse clicks? And I clicked over and hit like Spanish, and then the next thing I know, like, I'm in the installer and it's all in Spanish, right? But there was no, like, indication when I did that it actually accepted the choice that I made. But when it went to the next screen, it was like the last choice I made was what it accepted. And I couldn't get back to it to change the language back to English. I could have done the install in Spanish, but, you know, I wanted to get back to where it's what I'd be comfortable with and supposed to be using. So I had to quit out and restart it again. And then I got back in and I went and I realized, okay, it's a little pokey. Clicked on it, got English. And then the next stage, like, it's a bunch of different items, three columns. One is essentially, like, making sure your keyboard is correct and the time zone and the other one is, choosing packages and the type of installation, that column. And then there was another one like going to the next step. And like, so there was an option there for setting up the system or the disks on there. And I had gone in there and the partitioner was a little wonky. I had a hard time really like feeling confident I knew what it was going to do and what it was operating on. But once I figured out its weird, quirky layout, because I'm used to like FDisk or CFDisk or Ubuntu's partitioner, which I thought was a little self-evident, but the Fedora one, it could have been like the sluggishness of the installer could have impacted this too, but it felt like whenever I would click on something, it's like the first time I went through, I just couldn't get what I felt was correct. And so I wasn't comfortable with saving that partition information. I'm like, okay, I want to back out of it and then go back in. And so there's a quit button right there. So I hit the quit button on the partitioner and it quit me out of the installer. So I had to go back in and I ran into the problem again with the start screen, being kind of sluggish, and I accidentally hit the Chinese language. And so I was in the installer in some Asian language or Chinese dialect, I think it was. And that's why I had to restart again. And finally, you know, fourth chime was the charm. Well, actually it wasn't the charm. I figured out the partitioner. And I got that down. I got to what I wanted to do. And so then I went to the package part of it to say, what kind of install do you want to do? And it's nice because they have some categories there that you can turn on or off. Like there's like standard Fedora server or workstation. And then there's like other options in there for slim desktops or scientific applications, education applications. There was audio workstation, and then there was another one that was like, there was like sound and video, and then there was another one that was like an audio video engineering workstation. Graphical manipulation, office stuff, you know, just categories like that. So I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I'll choose the workstation and I'll add in a bunch of different things. Well, by the time I clicked everything and exited out of it, I couldn't go any further through here because there was, it flagged a problem with the packages or the package sets that were chosen. So I went back into that package section choosing, and it didn't, like, I couldn't figure out what the problem was. It just gave me some weird library dependency error on something couldn't be installed because it couldn't be found or whatever it is, which was really odd because I'm like, wait, this is a network install of anything. The network install should be resolving everything and pulling it properly. But I don't know. It turned out there was problems with the audio video engineering package set and the, I think it was the scientific, applications package set. Might have been the electronic workbench or the scientific, I forget which one it was. So, and it took me a little while to figure that out because it was such a pain in the ass. I restarted the installer again by hitting the quit button by accident, and had to go back through the process. But I unselected the engineering applications, and that got rid of one of the error issues, and I unselected the audio visual engineering section, and I got that resolved that other dependency. And I was like, I don't know what it's going to give me for like sound and video that's going to be different than the audio engineering, but hey, I could just install all this stuff afterwards. So once I had finished that and everything was copacetic there, I then went on to the next part of the installer where it says, okay, these are the changes that are going to be made. And once we get this going, there's no turning back. I said yes. So while it was doing that, it asked me to finish off the rest of the, you know, information like adding a user account and setting the desired permissions on that. And all that was pretty self-evident. The install went fairly quick for a network install. And when I rebooted, the machine came up, lickety-split. It prompted me with a login, and I chose the GNOME desktop. That was the option. I'm trying to think whether... You know, it was that second time around where I didn't futz with a lot of extras on here, because it did offer like KDE Plasma and Cinnamon and Mate, and then just a generic subsection of light window managers that would probably include Fluxbox and Window Maker. So I didn't have all those different ones installed. It was just GNOME, and I went into that. It came up really fast. I liked it. It was pretty. It was not dissimilar to Ubuntu, except it was a bluish theme. Everything worked and was snappy. Things were running a little faster. I had not wiped out my home directory. I carried over my home directory from the previous install. So yeah, there's probably cruft in my profiles in there for some applications. But so far it's running very smoothly. I've been happy with it. Getting used to the Red Hat side of things. I'm not using the right application. I understand this. But I do a lot. I've just grown accustomed to using Yum. I think it's DNF now, if I'm not mistaken, is what should be used as opposed to Yum. So I need to eventually, yes, I get a transition over to that. But you know, doing Yum install and everything, Yum search, it works pretty well. There was some extra stuff I wanted to install that wasn't in the Fedora package standard repository. So, you slap in RPM Fusion on there, and that's kind of like you're good to go with pretty much everything that you might want to install. I have my system back to where it should be. We'll see. I'm trying to think. If I'm not mistaken now, I think I've already tested this system out, because I think the last show that we had, I hadn't had, I'm trying to think if I installed Fedora then or no. Anyway, we're going to find out whether it produces this show tonight. That's Fedora 30. The install process was a little painful. But I got a solid workstation running here, so we'll see how it goes. Anybody else running Fedora?
And not right now.
I like what they have. I like the cut of their jib.
Mm-hmm. I remember what a big deal it was when GNOME 3 came out.
Yeah.
In Fedora. And now I think it's finally hit Red Hat, finally.
Oh, so Starship Tux was asking what desktop. It's GNOME Shell. So yeah. that's what's on here.
Otherwise known as GNOME 3, right. Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was toying around with, I was going to try Cinnamon, but after having some of the issues with the package selection, figuring out what combination didn't work, I just was like, at that point, I'm like, just give me, if I want anything else, I'll install it after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. It's a good time. Good time.
Rich doesn't even say goodbye anymore.
Because we bring up Linux and he runs away. I'm scared. I was like, I wonder. I haven't started messing around with any flat packs that I know of yet. I know that they sometimes mix installations or let you know. So I haven't done any flat packs. I didn't do what's it called?
Snaps.
I didn't do anything with snaps on this. But I was like, oh, you know what? I have these app images already downloaded. I wonder if they still work, right? What if they work? So I'm like, and Dingus was like, what do I need to install to get an app image to work? And I'm like, well, idiot, you don't need to install anything. That's the whole point of them. You pull them down, you just run it.
Yep.
And so, yeah, they ran perfectly. So I was like, oh.
I have used, I'm trying to remember what I use a snap pack for, and I can't remember. Snap? I used it for something.
Snap,
yeah.
App? Wait, snap?
Yeah, yeah.
A snap or an app image? Which one are you talking about?
Snap,
yeah.
I've never used that. I've used the app images, though.
Right.
Yeah, I used Snap when it was on Ubuntu, and it worked fine.
Right.
The big problem I had was, like, then if you want to see what was mounted, it's like everything's mounted as a virtual.
That is a pain in the ass.
Whoa,
yeah.
Really? Seriously?
Are you using Snap for Jira?
I'm sorry, am I using what, Joe?
No, Snap for Cura? No, I'm not.
Yeah.
I think that's the only Snap I'm using. I don't think that one's an app image. I think it's a Snap.
I think I used it for Kaden Live. Because I think I was able to use that to get Kaden Live installed.
Wait, what application are you talking about, Joe?
He's talking about Go ahead, Joe.
For slicing images. For 3D printing.
Oh!
3D
oh,
slicer.
Oh,
right.
Sorry.
Yep.
I was like, man, how are you nailing, like, narrowing right in on what kind of application Joel was running as a snap? I'm like, because I didn't hear what the application was you said. I'm like, oh, how does he know? But now I get it. Yeah, I get it now.
Yep, Cura. Kind of Linuxy related. After the last show, I finally got Steam rolling on my laptop again, and I played a little Portal 2 after the show. The last show.
Is that on Linux?
Now, It is. Portal 2 does work on Linux, and it was like 99 cents on sale.
So you're running Portal 2 under Linux?
Yep.
That is you.
At the very least, I imagine it'd work well under Proton.
You should rub Rich's nose in that.
What I did like about it too, because I have a Windows machine too, of course, because you know there's Steam games on Windows, but I had it downloaded and installed on my Surface as well on the Windows, and when I was playing in Linux, Steam basically saved my progress, so I picked up right where I left off when I was switching between machines, so that was pretty sweet. Yeah, and of course, Portal 2 is a Valve game, so. It's one of those games I'm not sure you could do another version of it past Portal 2.
Oh, they'll try.
Yeah.
You know what? And I'll say this now, in hopes that maybe somebody in the IRC has a better answer. But so I looked this up a while ago and then promptly forgot it. But I think Ubuntu and Fedora kind of use a similar. What is it I'm looking for? Networking workaround. Like, back in the day, you either statically entered your networking information or pulled it from a DHCP server, you know, so, and that's what you would get. So you have a name server, would be whatever name server.
Routing table?
No, not routing table. So what I'm talking about is name, particularly DNS resolution, right? So you would have a name server, either assigned DHCP, or you'd have to statically put in your name server in the etsyresolve.com file, right? But now it doesn't use that anymore. Because it runs like DNS mask and establishes like a local running name server. And that's what it uses. So it resolves everything to itself, and then what it can't do locally sends off to whatever name server. But so if you look in etsyresolve.com, you don't see like your name server in there. Actually, I do see my name server. But there's like DNS mask is capturing stuff. So it searches local domain first and then name server. So what I'm trying to figure out is like, where the hell is it getting my host name from? Because if I run, like, when you run uname-a, it lists your host name, if I'm not mistaken. And in my browser, like, when I open up a shell, in my, like, right at the prompt there, it's saying my username at Ubuntu. Right? And I'm trying to figure out where the hell it's getting Ubuntu from. And if I do uname-a, it's resolving to Ubuntu .local domain. So where the hell did it get Ubuntu from?
Did you do a complete wipe?
Yeah, I did. I did a complete wipe. Now, I remember it's showing me when I was partitioning, like, I clicked on the device, and it said that Ubuntu was installed on there. So, it said Ubuntu. But I totally wiped out the root partition and all that stuff. I only saved my home partition for that. Recreated the root partition. I don't remember there being a label Ubuntu anywhere. So, I'm trying
Which partition did you save?
I saved my home partition.
Could your settings have been in there?
But why would that affect the whole system?
I'd have to check and see where that is stored, the host name is stored, because I know you can change it if you want to, but I don't remember how. It's been a long time since I've needed to.
Like, because if I run hostname, it tells me hostname. If I cat Etsy hostname, my hostname in Etsy hostname is localhost.localdomain, right? But where is it getting that from? Like, where's it getting ubuntu.localdomain for hostname when Etsy hostname is something different? Like, what does it use to establish the host name other than Etsy host name? Where is it picking it up from? I can't find it. Maybe Grep will tell me where. Graybeard says, Here is how to set the host name of Fedora off of Fedora Magazine. Huh. Host name control. That's crazy. Remember when you just used to set it? By using host name?
Yep.
That's pretty wild. I've never heard of... Is that part of systemd? Huh. Where the hell is that? I gotta read up on this.
It's like when Ethernet adapters change from the nice and simple ETH0 to EC1Tor, well, whatever it is.
Oh, that, yeah. I mean, I get why they did it. ENP2S0?
Yeah.
ETH0 and ENP2S0. I get why they did it. I know that for a while there, it was a painful transition. Okay. Yes.
This is Robert Mortensen.
Yes.
Hey, man.
That's one of the many systemd changes.
Okay, I thought so. I haven't kept up on that, I guess.
It's one of the things I do when I build a new server in Red Hat 7 to change the host name. And then everything else is in the Etsy system control network. Something for where you set the interfaces.
Nice to hear from you, Mortensen.
Pardon?
Good to hear from you.
So where does it store that? Where does it store and pull that information?
When you run the systemd commands, so host control, set host name. It should write it to Etsy host name.
What, I run which command?
What did the Fedora article say?
Host name control.
CTL.
Yeah.
And then space set, I think it's set - host name, space, and then whatever host name.
See, because I ran it itself, hostname control, and when I do that, it prints out, like it says the static hostname is localhost.localdomain, but the transient hostname is ubuntu.localdomain. I'm wondering where it picks up Ubuntu from.
What's in, I checked Etsy FS tab and see if something's stored in there.
I don't see anything in the FS tab.
LSBLK, maybe /F, see if there's any name assignments to the main disk.
Still, I see the UUID, but not anything labeling it as a. It's a weird one. Anyway, I'll look into it. I got to read that article. Who posted that article? Graveyard, right?
Probably.
But thank you, Mordancy. But he went back. So, yeah, the host name environmental variable. Is Ubuntu. It's the transient host name that host name control shows me, the transient host name. So I just got to figure out where it pulls the transient host name from. It's excitement. It's assigned by network configuration. The hell? I wonder if for some reason it's getting that from my DHCP server.
It's picking up like a weird host name?
I bet that's the case. I bet she's picking
it
up.
It's stored on his router. And yeah, so when the exact same hardware goes looking for an IP address.
Correct.
Oh, man. You know what that
means? Yeah, because I can do that with my router. I basically can assign both a IP address and a host name right from a DHCP, so that whenever that MAC address goes and grabs the address, it gives it that name. You know what it is, Dan?
What is old.
We're getting old, that's what it is. And we don't like the fact that shit's changing.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
What I don't like also is I knew about this, and I was like, don't worry about it. And I'm like, I gotta re-get the Ubiquiti Unify software installed on here. So it's the Unify for Linux, I guess. Well, that's great. For Debian Ubuntu Linux. Where is the non-Debian Ubuntu Linux? I do this every single time. I completely forget about where I have to go to pull this software down.
Mm-hmm. Well, one good thing, I don't have to start work early tomorrow. Because I'm starting it massively late. Server migration, it kicks off at 6 in the evening tomorrow. So, other than one meeting during the day, I'm not planning on working at all until tomorrow evening.
So you don't have to get up at all tomorrow morning for work?
Not early. I have a call at like 11, but after that, I don't have anything till 6.
How long do you think it's going to take your server upgrade?
That's a good question. They're supposed to do the first data copy. But then I'm doing the rest of them because I have to in order to do what they need to do. It's one of those things where they could make my life easier and just let me run the clone once, all right? But no, they want to keep the environment name the same, and our tool, of course, can't go from production to production, so they're going to have to go, like, production to prod temp, then I delete the old environment, and then I clone prod temp to production, and that's the one that usually takes a while because you got to copy all their data over. You got back the database up and restore it to a different name, and it's a pain in the ass. Then you got to reconnect everything too. unfortunately, they have very little third party. You know, so it's a lot, all stuff I know, and I just went through it with another client, so. Changing everything over to OpenJDK, too. Oh, excuse me. Because Oracle loves to change their licensing so nobody can download it anymore unless they pay them.
For Oracle Linux?
No, Java.
Oh, Java. Wait. They changed the license?
Yep.
When did that happen? How did I miss that?
Yeah, if you go to the download page, you can't download the official one. Well, put it this way. For the version that we need, which we're certified through Java 8, so we're not even on Java 12 yet.
Okay. So you need an older version that's not supported anymore?
Yeah, it's that and licensing, too. They won't license anything but the most recent version, I think.
That sucks.
Amazon Coretto is the OpenJDK we're using. This is basically their version of Java. I think that's the version we went with because we use that when we go to do our SaaS and our hosted clients on AWS. So once I get through this week, I have 2 days next week, and then I will not work until the following Monday, I believe it is. So we'll be going to Detroit. I will probably not be on the show next week because it also happens to be camp meeting week at church, so. We got people coming from all over our district and our denomination coming to worship and see a good speaker and all that stuff. And Wednesday's the night that I'm the only night out of camp meeting that I can work. Yeah.
How long is that? So, wait, when did you say you're going camping?
That's next month. We're just doing that like over a weekend, like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Huh.
It's really cool though, cause it's a fairly, it's not a big island, you know, but like I said, it's the biggest island in Ohio. I said that in the pre-show, but, so it's got some bars and a restaurant and the campground, which is what we're doing. I rented a spot that has electric because we need electric for CPAPs. So and I got a new tent because I am not exactly sure whether the tent that we have that's in the garage will be any good because it's been in that garage for like 20 years now. So.
Are you taking them both?
No, I'll just take the one. We only need the one. It's the tent I have is an 8-person tent. If you count, there's like a screen room on the front, but the screen room, you can zip up these panels over the screens. That basically makes that another sleeping area. We won't need that. We'll just be in the back, all three of us.
Were you surprised about how tent technology has come down in price?
Oh yeah, I got an 8-person tent for $150. Yeah. I mean, and it's got a screen room. Yeah, I'm probably gonna. I haven't decided whether I'm gonna buy one or not, but they have these little tables that you can buy. I already have three camp chairs that we'll use, But I was thinking about getting a little table that we can put in there so that, you know, if it's raining or something, but we don't want to be in the main tent portion, we can sit out there and play games or something in the screen room just in case, you know, just in case it rains. Because, yeah, we're at Lake Erie. It could rain. You know, so, I mean, I'll probably bring a poncho anyway because I actually kind of like to go walking around in the rain sometimes, you know. Plus, be kind of cool to see rain hitting the lake too. But, so I'll have that, you know, rain gear with me anyway. But, you know, if it's just a washout, then we'll just sit in there and it'll be fine.
Anywhere where there's not porcelain facilities.
No, they have those. They have those. So there's a shower and there's a flush toilets too. So it's not just a hole in the ground, thankfully.
Delicious.
I've been there before. I was trying to remember if it was before we got married or maybe right after, but about like late 90s we were up there before, so I'm kind of familiar with it. You have to, of course, ride it. Since it's in the middle of Lake Erie, you have to ride the ferry over. And then if you're interested in amusement parks, you can actually see one of the biggest ones in Ohio, Cedar Point, from the island. So, and then you also see Perry's Monument over on Middle Bass Island, which is not too far from Kelly's. But you know, we're probably going to fish. There's a nice nature area. I'm going to take the drone, of course. So I'm hoping for good weather so I can get some good pictures from the drone, which I do believe it's legal to fly there. So I'm going to double check before. I think Ohio does. It basically says that they're okay with you flying it, but you have to use a designated launch area, okay? Well, some of the parks actually just called their parking lot that. So just walk out to where a concrete parking lot is and take off, you know. So, but it's pretty cool. You know, they have, you can bring your bike. I probably won't have enough room to bring bikes, and it's not worth me spending money to buy a bike rack that I'll use, you know, maybe once or twice a year. So if we want to ride around on a bicycle, we can probably rent one. But they even have golf carts you can rent, but that's not going to happen because that's $110 a day to rent a golf cart. You know, so, and it's not that big of an island. I've walked from, last time we went there, I walked from the campground to, like, there's like a little shop with t-shirts and sweatshirts and stuff like that. Because we left Columbus, drove up there. When we got there, when I left Columbus, it was like 80 or 90 degrees in Columbus. When I got up to the island of Lake Erie, it's like in the 50s and the 60s. And everyone was freezing. We all, because we brought like shorts and t-shirts. So we all went and bought sweatshirts and stuff at that little shop there. There's lots of little shops and restaurants there. It's not like a lot of them, you know, so we won't be eating. You know, I'll definitely be cooking on the campfire. Probably trying to do most of it on the campfire. Like, I think I'm gonna get stuff to make camp pies of different varieties. You ever make those, Dan?
Make which one?
Something called a camp pie.
This sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's basically, and you can get them in round or square. And it's kind of like those sandwich presses, but like,
oh, yeah,
on
yeah,
a long rod. So you you butter the bread, and then you put your filling in there, you snap that sucker shut, and stick it in the campfire to warm it up.
No, I know what you're talking about. It cuts off the crust and everything or something.
Yep,
like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, the round ones do. The square ones don't. I almost prefer the round ones. I have a friend too that would also, she'd do that with her bagel. She'd slam a bagel in there and just stick it in there. For me, I'm probably gonna, if I were to do like something like toast or wanting to get like a, you know, like a kind of a toast on a bagel or a piece of bread or something, I'd probably just throw that into a skillet and do it that way. You know, like, I've got a cast iron. I think I might take that just because it's so easy to clean the cast iron up. You know, don't have to wash it. Just scrape the food bits out, put a little bit more oil on it, slam it back in a Ziploc bag, and I'm good to go. You know, and we don't do like, I when I go camping, I bring, car camping especially, I'll bring paper plates. I'm not too good to eat on paper plates for a few days. But camp pies are just so flexible because you can make them sweet, you can make them savory, you know, like you can take like a pepperoni, cheese, and some pizza sauce and throw that in there and make a little pizza pocket. Or I think my dad one year we had he had hot dogs and a jar of sauerkraut in there, so he threw that together and made a hot dog and sauerkraut one. I think I'm gonna try doing like an egg one, get some like ham and some eggs. I'll probably pre-cook the eggs. I'll probably scramble those and pre-cook them on the stove, and then throw those in some cheese and bacon, and then throw that in there till the cheese is all melting and the bread's toasted for a breakfast sandwich. And for coffee, I'm going to bring my AeroPress.
Good choice.
Yeah, it makes one, and all I gotta do is boil water. You know, I was thinking either between that or, and I don't drink instant coffee, like, hardly at all, but I have tried.
Why would you drink instant coffee?
Well, Starbucks has their Via, it's kinda almost like the drink sticks, and it's actually pretty good for an instant coffee. It actually has got real coffee.
Why would you drink Starbucks either, but that's besides the point.
Well, but I actually, that's kind of what I have right now. I'll probably pre-grind a coffee before I leave because I have a grinder at home. I don't have one that I can take. Well, I could probably take
a half gallon of cold brew and then just take that with you.
That's an option too. I need to get a new cold brewer. I had picked up the Ronco one, which is all plastic, and that thing was long.
If you look on like Amazon, they sell it's a half gallon mason jar with the sleeve that fits in, and you just fill it with coffee, fill it up to the top, and you're good to go.
Yep. I guess I can just throw that in.
Well, you can measure it out, be a little more professional. I usually measure it out myself, but I just finished a half gallon this morning.
You just microwave it after it's done, right?
No, I drink it cold.
Oh, okay. I'd do that. I would do that too, but not in the morning. In the morning, I want a cup of hot coffee.
Well, no. I mean, you could heat it up. It's not like it's that. I mean, if you making it more with a my brain just went blank. If you bring a real strong one and you cut it with water, yeah, more concentrate. That was the word I was looking for. Then you could, you know, if you're cutting it with water, you can cut it with hot water. I don't make concentrate. I just make about a 16-to-1 ratio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, which is basically what I drink anyways.
Right.
So I never really have an issue with it. And I just, like I said, lately, you know, in the evenings because it's been so damn hot, you know, Pour a cup of that out there. You know, it takes 20 minutes for me to make it, you know, and then, you know, leave it out overnight. Usually do about a 12-hour brew with it.
Right.
Extract with it. Pull that thing out of there, and it's good to go the next morning.
Now, I have bought the Stoke cold brew at the grocery store, and it's actually really good if you haven't never tried that yet.
Yeah, I've never tried that. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it a lot, and I'll take that. Usually what I like to do with that is pour it over ice, maybe put a little, if I want some milk or creamer in it, I might put that in there. Sometimes I just put like a little bit of sweetener in there if I want it sweet. Yeah. I have drank it straight before.
Well, nicely with cold brews, it takes, you know, it pretty much takes almost all the bitterness out of a cup of coffee.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
Some coffee is not bitter. I mean, it depends on how you make it and all. But it's definitely, you know,
fresh. That's a big reason why I like the AeroPress. The AeroPress does that too. I mean, it's so nice. I can use cheap crap coffee in the AeroPress and it still makes good coffee.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I've never tried it. I've been wanting to try with the Cafe Bustelo or what's the one? There's one with chicory in it. I can't remember. I've been wanting to try that just once. I probably wouldn't buy it regularly.
I've never had that one. I've seen that. I've looked at it, thinking about doing it myself, but
then stuck. Maybe I should order a pound of a Death Wish before I do that in bean form. Death Wish coffee is so good.
Yeah, as much as I hate the Keurig stuff, that's the only stuff to me that actually even tastes is drinkable. I have not found anything else because, you know, we have the Keurig sitting downstairs, although I don't think it's been fired up in 6 months, but, you know, it's just actually getting dusty is all it's getting. But that was the only one. I tried that because they had it at Wegmans.
Oh, and
that was actually really good, but.
Yeah, they have the K-Cups at my Walmart, actually, of Death Wish, and it's really good. Any of the dark stuff I find, you know, if you have to drink out of a Keurig, any of the darkest stuff that you can find, Death Wish is one of them. I think I got one called Afterburner now that's out there. And I also like the Sam's Club French Roast in it too. In the K-Cups, those are, I get like for a hundred of them for 35 bucks, which ain't too bad.
Yeah, that's not too bad there.
So, and I never brew it. A lot of people will say, oh, it's got all the, you can brew all these sizes. No. If you brew anything bigger than 8 ounces, it's going to taste like crap.
I've played around with that. Even with 8 ounces, most of them taste like crap to me.
Yeah, you can reduce it down to six. I've done that before too. But never brew it more than 8, ever. If you have to drink that stuff. Which I don't have to. I just do it because it's convenient.
Yeah. Well, with that, I'm getting out of here, guys.
Yep.
Witching hours upon me.
It's 10 o'clock.
It's 10 o'clock. It's actually 10:02. Do you know where Woo-hoo. Your children are?
I really don't care because he's 20.
I always remember that. It was like Channel 5, I think it was, in New York Market. He's always at it. It's 10 o'clock. Do you know where your children are?
Mm-hmm.
But, anyways, have a good evening, everybody. Thank you for listening. And maybe we'll be on next week. Maybe we won't.
All right, sir.
Have a good
week. We'll see you, Alan. Jonas says, I despair for all K-Cup users. Well, you know. I like it because it's fast. Within minutes of me getting out of bed, I have a cup of hot coffee in my hand because I have the timer set to come on right before I get out of bed. So, and Dan's lucky because he never got that addiction, did you?
I'm good.
You're not a coffee drinker, are you?
Not usually.
Yep.
Fight.
I tell you one thing I will never buy from my Keurig is their teas. Those things are a rape you.
Yeah.
I'll probably do some AeroPress tomorrow, Jonas. I love my AeroPress. It just does a good job. Like I said, when the Keurig I have dies, I'll probably just get it, replace it with a kettle. Get one of them electric kettles. The only downside with that is I'd probably, With that, what I probably would do is I'd probably fill it up before I go to bed and see if I can't get one of those smart timer things to turn on. See, Jonas says it sounds like he's roasting his own coffee. I really want to try that. I have never done it yet. You can do it with an air popper. If I just go to a thrift store, I can do that. Get one of those and then hack it and make it work. Because green coffee keeps a lot longer than roasted coffee, for sure. So I made something different this week, Dan, for dinner Tuesday night.
What'd you make?
Spam musubi.
Nice. How was it?
It's pretty good. Probably one thing that I didn't pick up that I should have when I was going to make it was the rice wine vinegar. All I had is a little bit of white vinegar, and I used that with the rice, and it was okay. It probably would have tasted better with the rice wine. But the rice wine vinegar, I should say. But as it base is extremely simple. I mean, you just marinate the spam in oyster sauce, soy sauce, and sugar. That's it. And then you marinate it that for like 5 minutes, and then you cook it a couple minutes on each side in the fry pan over medium high, and then you take the rice and make a blob that's the same size as a piece of spam, and then put that all on a sheet of nori and roll it up.
Nice.
Yep. I still have some in there. I might eat that for lunch tomorrow. Because the nice thing about that musubi is that you can really you can warm it up if you want, but you can eat it cold too.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
So very popular in Bento. It's really not Japanese. It's Hawaiian, but I need to go over to the Cam Asian food store, check that place out. I haven't been to one for a while.
All right, guys, I'm off too.
Yeah, we got to wrap up.
See you, Joe. Yep, time to wrap up.
Talk to us.
Have a rest. Oh, no. What am I doing? Here we go. So this is it. What are we playing? Promos. Yeah. You like your promos, right, Joel?
Sure.
We have them. What am I missing? I'm missing a promo. Oh. It's Lucas. Alright. Alright. This is it. Thank you, everybody. Here are your promos. We'll talk to you in a week. Have a happy. Have a happy, Joe. Da-da-da.
The Jack Attack Podcast. Where chic,
oh dear,
meets geek.
Ones and zeros, ones and zeros, ones and zeros.
Powered by Linux.
Linux.
You my fun. Recorded in Windsor, Nova Scotia, with your hosts John Watson and Kelly Penguin Girl.
A girl?
A girl.
A girl?
It's the Jack Attack. That's the JAKattack.com. Time well wasted.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making it for young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah, awesome.
What?
Wake up.
Long
enough to go to bed, huh?
Yeah. How did it get this information? Dun, dun, dun. Wait, no, that is... Oh, yeah, yeah. Stop this. All right.
Right.
Dude. Yeah. Stop messing around with Docker. You know what I'm saying? Oh, wrong.
I do.
Yeah, all right. Stop messing around with Docker. All right, here we go. Got to get this show out.
Yeah.
Ooh. You like kombucha?
Not interested.
I just proved my first batch to the... Finished the first fermentation of the first batch. I love kombucha.
It's always fun. It's weird that it only comes up in Mumble.
Yeah, it might just be the sampling rate in Mumble.
It could be something weird, yeah, because I'm doing, like, you know, full, you know, audio quality when I do, because I test before I come on every night anyways, just to, you know, make sure that I'm not, like, trying to blast people out of the room or anything.
Yep.
So I don't know exactly what it is. Once the show starts, I'll start hitting the mute button.
So Pat, I was shooting the CMR-30 over this past week, and I finally got it sighted in. That thing is like a freaking tack driver. I'm shocked.
What is that, 22 Magnum?
Yeah, the 22 Win Mag.
Yeah, that's a good caliber. I have one of those little North American Arms revolvers. The Pug.
It was an 8-shooter?
No, it's 5.
It's only 5, yeah. Okay. Single I know which one that is. Yeah.
It's tiny. This is like, you know, you're playing cards and the guy who you're playing against, you know, rips you off and you have to shoot him in the face multiple times. Like in a Western. Oh, you know?
Yeah, yeah. The Pug, I mean, it's probably smaller than the key fob for my car.
It is. It's tiny.
Yeah, so I was at Gator Guns, and I was shooting in the rifle range because all the pistol lanes were taken. So I guess, you know, this old graybeard FUD was the range officer, and I guess he saw in the video I was shooting the CMR-30, and then I must have picked up the 45 and shot that. He comes running in. He's like, "What caliber is that?" I'm like, "22 Win Mag." I'm like, "You must have heard me shoot the 45. Hey, you can shoot 308 in that range. You're okay to shoot. I mean, I shoot most Nagants in that range." I'm like, "I don't know why the guy was running in. You know, wonder what caliber I was shooting."
Exactly.
I don't know.
I have a binary trigger in my MP5, and sometimes I shoot that. Do a mag dump and the fucking guy comes around. Yeah, you shoot full auto. I'm like, no, it's a binary trigger. Still legal.
In your state?
Nah, most states.
No, not in Florida.
They banned binary triggers?
Yeah, with the Marjorie Stoneman asshole.
Oh my god.
Yeah, they, you know, any trigger modifications. Technically, I don't know that I could put a, you know, Geissele trigger in a AR-15.
I was going to say, an aftermarket trigger.
Yep.
What he said.
How you doing, Joe?
Oh, just enjoying my freedom while it lasts.
What are you talking about?
You divorced?
Oh, no. Just in general. American freedom, you know?
Why, until the Democrats take charge and ruin it for everyone?
Republicans ain't so much better, dude.
Well, you know, actually, all of the gun regs come down when it's a Republican president.
That's true. Minus the Clinton gun ban.
Right.
Yeah.
But
the Republicans do, like, the importation bans. You can't bring anything from China anymore.
Right. We're all fired up in a frenzy under Obama. He couldn't get anything done. But, you know, Trump gets the bump stock ban through.
That's bullshit. That's a very bad precedent.
I don't know about silencers, suppressors.
Yeah, I'm going to be pissed if they try to pull that crap.
The only thing is it just points out how clueless our politicians are on both sides.
In Trump Jr., he's...
More so than others.
You know, Trump's son is a big gun guy. You know, Hank had Colion Noir on, and he said, "Yeah, you know, I got him on speed dial. I know the guy. I have no idea about the disconnect." He says Trump Jr. has suppressors. He knows all about him. I don't know why his dad's going off on him.
He's one of the 10 people in New York City who has concealed carry because he paid off all the right people.
Right. And so that's the other bad thing about that. The Democrats always like, "Oh, you know, you can't this because they're too poor to this, they're too poor to that." Well, I'm not Bloomberg. I can't hire ex-Navy SEALs to follow me around. And you're telling me that nobody deserves protection. Only Bloomberg deserves protection. And that's the problem with these things. And then I forget what states it is where they want to put all sorts of taxes on, you know, a permit. A permit's $1,000 and, you know, they're
all
jacking up all...
New Jersey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was Jersey. That's it. They're jacking up the permit prices and, So realistically, all you're hurting is the poorest among us who live in the worst communities and have the least ability to defend themselves. Somebody that has more money, they can afford, you know, the $1,000 or whatever it is for a carry permit or whatever training you're going to require and hoops to jump through to get the permit. Whereas somebody that, like, if you took somebody like my wife in a bad community, put her in a bad community, here's somebody who doesn't weigh 120 pounds, you're going to beat the crap out of her. She's got no chance.
Hey, I listed Alan as a contact for my concealed carry permit. Alan, did the police ever call you? The county sheriff? I guess that's a no.
He must have walked away.
Yeah. In Pennsylvania, it's $25, good for 5 years.
Sorry, I realized I had the mute on there, sorry. But no, no one ever called me.
Yeah, the county sheriff never called them.
Well, when I got my carry permit in Minnesota, because I wasn't a resident, I could go to whatever county I wanted. So some sheriffs, basically, they had a rubber stamp out. Other sheriffs, they had them locked in a vault. So I went to the one county. The sheriff intentionally had it, like, the cheapest price in his county and, you know, was pretty much shall issue or, you know, absolutely issue. But if you're a resident in, like, Hennepin County or whatever, you're screwed. Like, that sheriff, he'll screw you. He'll hold it up for 90 days. And, I mean, I got mine in a couple of weeks. It was pretty amazing.
My uncle used to own several check cashing businesses in New York City back in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And, back in the 60s, my two older cousins, who are 5 and 6 years older than me, when they were toddlers, they kidnapped my aunt and my two cousins, and they wanted a couple $1 million in ransom. You know, luckily the cops, you know, they knew what the hell they were doing, and they figured out who was doing it, and they found them, and luckily they were, you know, uninjured. And,
oh my gosh!
And yeah, well, the kids suffered. You know, they had nightmares for years. Those kids when they were little.
I bet.
But even him, after that, he had to pay people off to get a carry permit.
Please.
And this was in the 60s.
Please. How crazy is that? And you know what it is? New York has what they call the Sullivan Laws. And Sullivan was part of Tammany Hall. He was a big player. He had syphilis, and part of syphilis is paranoia. So he got gun laws passed through, you know, New York State that basically you can't carry.
Well, in New York, they have this one law that it's coming up before the Supreme Court where if you're a resident of New York City, you were unallowed to carry your firearm outside of your home unless you were going to one of, I think, 6 sanctioned gun ranges and you had to get pre-approval from the local police department. Precinct?
Oh my gosh.
So that's going to the Supreme Court. You know, but they tried to change the regs, like they're trying to like, change it at the last minute to try to get out of it, but it sounds like it's gonna go no matter what. They're gonna bring the case up probably in the fall or the early winter. I mean, that's pretty unconstitutional. You're not allowed to take your own property outside of your
home. No safe passage, no nothing.
You can't go to your, like, cabin in the woods or something? Or
right, right.
Out of state to a competition or something? It's crazy.
And the interesting thing about that is if you violate, like, they make these laws so hard for the honest citizen that if you violate the law, you're guilty of a felony and you lose your Second Amendment rights.
They had some case over here. Are we going to start the show anytime soon? It's already 8:33.
We got 2 minutes.
Oh, okay.
We start at 8:35.
Oh, do we? Sorry. They had a case over here. Some guy from New Jersey. He got a post office box, and then he went and he got his Pennsylvania driver's license, and then after that he went and he bought a bunch of guns from different shops.
Oh, jeez.
But they plead him down and he's only doing 2 years. You would think something like that, they would throw the book at them.
Right,
But it's a very common thing everywhere now where prosecutors and DAs, they don't want to be bothered having to go to trial. So what they'll do is they'll plead down every fucking case so they get out of it and it's a quote-unquote win. So you get somebody who should be looking at like 10 to 15 years getting out in two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's... So the problem with that is we have gun laws on the books and they're not getting enforced.
Exactly.
Yep.
And some you're right, somebody like that should be put away for a very long time.
Absolutely.
Or then you get like the case of that that kid, what was that, Phoenix, I think? I think a guy stabbed him or something, I can't remember. But, you know, the guy's going to trial for murder, you know, and they're like, well, that's not enough. I'm like, oh, life sentence or death penalty is not enough? What do you want to do? How can you make it more illegal?
Well, so the flip side of these types of things is this woman, she was a Pennsylvania resident, accidentally got into New Jersey. She was carrying, told the cop, you know, they locked her up. They had her, you know, and she was a mother, I think a single mom. What a horrible, horrible crime they did to this lady.
That.
Yeah, that happens quite often when you drive in New Jersey. Always make sure you're not carrying.
Oh, jeez. It, you know, if you carry every day, I couldn't tell you how many times I'm standing at the airport waiting for the bus to pick me up at the long term lot, and I reach into my pocket, and I'm like, oh crap. If it's something you're doing all the time, it's pretty easy to mess up with.
My tent that I just got came from New Jersey, believe it or not.
The People's Republic of New Jersey? Alright, excuse me, I gotta put my son to bed. So, I'll be back.
Dan, you there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, we hear you now.
We can.
Oh.
Alan.
Hello.
This is 8:16. That was just where I wanted to be, too. Alright. How was everybody's fourth, huh?
Wait, is it
not
to spend 4 days at home?
Enough.
Spent 4 days where?
Four days at the Hughes Compound Southern Command.
Was your whole family
four days
there?
In a row. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. They didn't leave because I was there.
Hung out with her friends or something. I don't know.
Oh my gosh, she had a sleepover every night somewhere. It was, you know, this place, that place, over here again. We had a fire in the fire pit. They're in the pool. No, wait, nobody went in the pool.
Why don't they go in the pool anymore?
Crap if I know. I don't even know why I have that stupid cement pond. I like it, but I don't even go. Heck, I'm 10 miles from the ocean. We're going to go to the beach. We didn't go.
I went fishing.
Did you catch anything?
Alligator?
It's either a sunfish or a bluegill. Little tiny thing, not even worth keeping. Threw it back. And I didn't catch it, Luke did. His second cast. Like we weren't even there a half hour.
Nice.
And he caught one.
That's pretty cool.
Kind of a practice run for our camp out. We're going to go to Kelly's Island, which is the largest island in Ohio.
So Luke may not starve to death, but you will.
He would have done that fish because that fish hardly had no meat on it.
You know, it's kind of funny. You say the largest island in Ohio, and I like when I think of Ohio,
yep.
I don't think of islands at all.
It's in Lake
largest
Erie.
Island in the Bahamas.
You're right. The Lake Erie's there. That's right. So
yep.
You
got Middle Bass there too, which that's more of a party island. You know, that's more of, you go there. Damn, would love it there. You just go there, drink.
Dan Fry.
But, hello, Dan Fry.
Where's Dan Fry?
Hey, I'm back again.
I was talking about Dan Yu.
Oh. Alright. I guess we should start, huh?
My help.
Do it.
Do it! I just want to look at something. Actually, I want to see if look at that.
Oh, you need a microscope for that.
Let me down again, huh? No, maybe not. Alright, so.